Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton, and this is everything you never knew you wanted to know about, what do we call this?
Brain Junk Not Safe for Work?
Do we want to? Brain Junk Not Safe for Work, maybe remove your 9-year-old from the room. Yeah, these are all the topics that we message each other and say, this is hilarious, awesome, gross, horrifying, too much for brain junk, because we do want your child to be able to listen with you and enjoy like elephant farts and things like that, but not necessarily like disembowelments, for instance. I do not have one of those today, do you?
No, I do not. Although we talk about some sexy stuff. We talk about some gross stuff. I mean, like, I don't think any of it is inappropriate, but like, you know, if you're just not sure, we're marking it as explicit. Give it a little listen. But the Brain Junk After Dark we did was super popular. And so, I mean, like, who are we to deny the audience?
I know. So we're going to kick things off with some ways you can spice up your sexy time terminology. Yeah. But we're going to go with like 15 and 1600s. What were the innuendos being tossed around in, like, say, 1521? They were playing at Couch Quail. late 15. I can't wait to your reactions for all these. They're terrible.
Wait. Like, Couch Quail.
Yeah.
Like, if we're, like, heavy petting on the couch, that's
this
couch.
This is, like, their euphemisms for sex, I guess.
Oh, Couch Quail.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's squeaky?
I don't know. It has that little thing on its head. 1578, ride below the crupper. I did not Google. I feel like that's a ship term or something. I don't know.
Okay, I need to know what a crupper is. I'm sorry,
I don't know.
But
I'm gonna have to Google it.
Okay, so a crupper is a strap buckled to the back of a saddle and looped under a horse's tail to prevent the saddle or harness from slipping forward. So what was the phrase?
Ride below the crupper.
Well, yes, you are.
I don't think you can look up too many more of these and have me maintain my composure.
Nothing will stop me.
fadoodling. That's just a silly one.
Oh.
1616, they were putting the devil into hell. How about, here's another, where'd it go? Shot twixt wind and water. In 1665. All right.
That's very specific.
It's very descriptive. Join giblets. That's a dignified one.
Oh, no, that's not nice.
Late 1600s. Play at rump scuttle and clapper de pooch. That's quite the phrase. Ride a dragon upon St. George, 1698.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's refined, that one.
I feel like this is... make feet for children's stockings? I'm not sure.
Make feet for children's stockings?
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
That's troubling. And I can't quite lay my finger on why.
I know. That was exactly what I thought. I'm like, is that? I don't know. How about have one's corn ground? 1800. And 1863, horizontal refreshments. They were getting a little more vigorous there.
Oh, excuse me, Beatrice. I don't have time to talk this afternoon. I'm going for some horizontal refreshment.
At which point I will arrive at the end of the sentimental journey. That's another one. That's 1896. They definitely turned a corner that era. Get one's ashes hauled, 1910. So there you go, kicking off our Brain Junk After Dark episode. Hopefully you can incorporate some of those into your lifestyle if you have a partner.
Oh, I adore all of those. I think, though, the horse one,
ride below the crupper.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah. So.
Well, let's kind of keep on that same vein.
Okay.
So there's this joke around our house, if you need some money, that you're going to put your feet on OnlyFans.
Yes, there is a really terrific episode of Schitt's Creek about feet.
Well, so the foot fetish thing.
Yeah.
Well, according to Live Science, academic studies on fetish discussion groups found that nearly half of all non-genital fetishes focus on feet.
Wow. Why?
I'm going to explain. I'm so excited.
That's weird.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two thoughts on this, and I'm going to take my favorite direction. So, okay. There's a neuroscientist, Villa Nayar Ramachandran, was trying to dig deeper into why people with amputations still feel their removed limb, you know, that mm-hmm. phantom limb syndrome.
Yeah.
So he was mapping the brain, trying to figure out where is it in the brain that you perceive the limb that is missing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but first we got to talk about the somatosensory cortex, because that's okay. where we're feeling all the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So your somatosensory cortex runs right down there in the middle of the brain. It's where you feel things. So like they have a mapped out picture, and it's like, okay, this part feels your fingers, and this part feels your lips and your nose and your eyes and all this kind of stuff. They've kind of mapped out.
So you could have brain damage and stop feeling your lips and suddenly no longer be able to drink your coffee?
Well,
theoretically, yes. I'm going to say yes. Go on, please.
His issue was that, like, if your limb has been removed, yes, the nerves go to a spot, but then they end. Why is it like you could still feel it itching? Or for some people, like, say you had a finger amputated, but when someone touches your elbow, you would feel your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because depending on where these locations are that they've mapped out on the somatosensory cortex, they kind of sometimes can get miswired, they think.
Mm-hmm.
And so while he's looking at all of that for that phantom limb, it turns out that all the way over on one end, your feet, your toes, and your genitals are kind of like three houses in a cul-de-sac. They're all right next to each other.
Oh, really? That is weird placement.
Yes. And so his thought was that because they're so close together, maybe sometimes it's all getting a little confused. And so when you're looking at feet, it's stimulating other parts of your body. And so that you've got this like foot fetishy thing going on.
Okay. That actually seems like a reasonable explanation.
It does. But I also read a paper. Reports of intimate touch, erogenous zones, and the somatosensory cortical region that was done in 2013. And they're like, So their study was on 800 people from the British Isles and sub-Saharan Africa. And they're like, there isn't enough evidence to support the crossed wires hypothesis. Like, yes, the feet and the toes and the genitals are all really close together there in the brain for that feeling your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, I don't think that wires are crossed, but there's something happening somewhere in the brain that is definitely linking the two. I mean, half of all fetishes focus on feet.
That is a lot.
It is a lot.
So that's a little hard to explain away.
Yeah. So something's going on.
Wow. Yes, it is. That's interesting.
And if you have ugly finger toes and you need to pay for your kids' college, you know where to go.
Yeah. Wow. I don't think that's going to be my new side job.
It's not? Oh, okay.
No, I don't think so. Sadly.
Now, you said you had some gross stuff.
I do. This is one about torture. And so, or capital punishment.
Okay.
Let's call it capital punishment, but it is a torturous one. We're going to go all the way back to, got to adjust my bifocals, the old Achaemenian Empire with this was the first Persian Empire. So we're talking like
way back,
like the several hundred years BC era. And there was a king. His name, why is his name not popping up?
Uh-oh.
There was a king once upon a time, King Artaxerxes II.
Oh.
King Artaxerxes II was in ancient Persia. He reigned for a good long years. And that's what your history teacher says to do. If you don't know the specifics, dial it back to a general level that you can live with. And that's my general level today. And we know about this because of the author Plutarch, who wrote the life of Artaxerxes.
Ah.
And so this is anecdotal from Plutarch's recording of that. But King Artaxerxes did live. He had a younger brother named Cyrus who tried to rebel and take over the empire. Cyrus was killed by a soldier. And for some reason, I'm curious about this, but didn't delve any deeper. Artaxerxes punished the soldier who killed his brother who was trying to rebel against him.
Oh, well, you know, but that could be one of those things like I'm the only one who is allowed to be mad at my sibling, you know?
Yes, that's kind of what I wondered. So punishment is in order. And the punishment chosen, according to Plutarch, is scaphism, or it's called the boats. You see it. Two boats that fit together, basically, are one is laid normal boat style, and the person is laid on the boat on their back between the boats, and then they stick their hands, head, and feet out. So it can't be a very big boat. And then another boat is popped on top of them. The victim is forced to eat and is covered with milk and honey and then set adrift to attract whatever is going to find them. So they will either die of exposure or any number of other things.
That.
Yeah, you could live a long time like that.
Yeah, I mean, initially I was like, well, that doesn't sound so bad. But.
Yeah, so you're going to have your own waste around you and you're covered in milk and honey.
Seagulls. Oh my God, seagulls.
Oh gosh. So that was alarming.
Wow.
Again, if your children are still in the room.
I'm sorry.
Too late. They heard that. But just like the creative horror of that. My goodness.
Yeah, because you'd have a lot of time before you needed water.
Yes. It reminded me of the scene in The Mummy.
The scene in The Mummy? Which
scene
in The
Mummy? The Humdai, where they live mummify him, pop him into the thing. And
that's right.
They don't remove his organs. They just leave him alive and pop him in.
That's super yikes.
That's very dark.
Okay, let's just keep getting darker.
Butterflies will drink blood. Have we talked about that before? Or is it tears that we talked about?
I think we talked about tears, although it stands to reason because blood's nice and salty.
Yeah, it's filled with minerals. So that's another one. Raccoons are supposedly willing to eat human flesh, but the internet is kind of like, that's a stretch. So that's good news. Probably they're not going to eat your dead body.
I think any scavenger is going to eat your dead body.
Yeah, they'll give it a try, but they're probably not going to try to kill you.
Oh.
So I'm bringing things back up here. I'm trying to elevate things again so you can tell us your next thing.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna talk about the shrike.
Ooh, what's that?
The shrike, also known as the butcher bird.
Hmm. Is it German? It sounds very German.
It does, doesn't it? Shrike. East ein Schrecken.
Yeah.
So way back in the day, I found this sci-fi paperback on my dad's shelves. It was called Hyperion. It was this kind of trashy looking cover, but it has a giant monster on it covered with spikes. And and they called the monster the Shrike. People worship the Shrike by impaling themselves on the spikes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Right. And okay. I remember being completely horrified and found out that the Shrike is real, except it's a bird.
Oh, wow. So they based this monster on an actual bird?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's a songbird. It's native to the United States, Eurasia, and Africa. Described by the Cornell Bird Lab as chunky.
Same, buddy.
Yeah, I know, right? The 6 to 9 inch white and gray bird. It has a black mask across its eyes, like a kind of like the raccoon. They can carry prey as large as themselves.
Oh, so that's about the length of a sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper.
Yeah, like a robin, a big robin sized bird. So they're called chunky because they have really big heads, and they have big heads because they have big, thick neck muscles, because they are catching grasshoppers, crickets, mice, lizards, frogs, and even other birds.
Ooh, what?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So the way they catch them, something like a mouse, they will, they don't have like big talony feet, you know, so they've got to use this kind of slightly crisscrossed beak, and they grab, shake, paralyze, sometimes not even kill, and then just because it's a big thing to eat and they're not a very big bird, they like to impale it on whatever is handy.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. There are pictures of like barbed wire fences covered with dead grasshoppers that are just jammed onto the barbed wires.
Wow, that is weirdly creepy and intentional.
Right? Any plant with large thorns, like we have a hawthorn, it has like two inch long thorns. You know, they'll just impale a mouse on there. Super metal. Yeah.
So they use their beak to do that?
They use the beak to kill.
Yeah.
Fly off with the thing, and then they jam it on something sharp to save it for later.
Ooh. Wow.
Right? And they'll even capture monarchs and other poisonous insects, and they hang them up for a few days to let the poison break down, and then they can eat them too.
Oh my goodness, not even the poison will save the monarchs?
Nope.
Wow.
Not from the Shrike. Not from the Shrike.
If birds made horror movies, these would definitely be a horror movie topic. Wow.
They totally would. Yeah. So, and it's this cute little bird, but with murderous intentions. And then I love this. So the stabby behavior is how the males romance females.
Oh.
Yeah. Ew. So it's that time of year. He's trying to, you know, get some girls. And so he decorates an area with bodies.
Oh.
And anything else he can find, you know, bits of plastic, little bits of leaves. So he's got like this really fancy murder boudoir.
Oh, wow.
Then the way he dances for her is he mimes out sticking prey onto thorns.
Oh, gosh.
And if she's interested, then he feeds her a snack.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh. That is just weird.
I love nature.
Yeah, it's amazing. Wow. Among my other small commercial sized tidbits are that we probably all know this. You've seen enough shows. Pigs will eat people. So yes. Farmers have been found in pieces or pieces of them have been the only thing that's left.
You're like, I found a belt buckle.
Yes, there was a case in 2014 in Oregon like that. They're like, they found his hat and an arm. And the feed bucket. That would just be like your 14-year-old comes out and tells you it's time for dinner, but it's too late.
Well, the pigs had dinner.
That's right. What would you even do with those pigs then? Those pigs have eaten people. Do they have to all be euthanized? You cannot sell those pigs for food now, right?
Do you? Okay. If it was me and I tripped and I fell in the pig pen and I got snacked upon and there's nothing left, but you know they ate me.
Mm-hmm.
Respect. I would like to think that at some point Chaz would be like, I'm having some bacon. That seems fair. Circle of life.
Yeah.
Is that too gross?
I don't think I could do it. Theoretically, you would be digested. And so the risk, it wouldn't be directly eating human flesh. And so the
true
implications for us that you see that are a problem with cannibalism wouldn't be a problem. But I don't think I could do it. I don't know.
You disappoint me.
I also think I would be the one that starves it. They would be eating my body at sea if we were. I don't think I could do it. I would jump overboard and try to swim away, I think. I'd be eaten by sharks, not people.
You're like, peace out, friends. It's been fun.
I'd be like really trying to hold still and not look like food in the water. That's what I would be doing.
Huh. Hmm.
This episode is definitely dark.
Right? Welcome to October. That's when we're doing this.
Yes. It's going to air like Christmas. We're going to really bring the mood up. Thanksgiving.
Maybe I should move it. I should move it to October.
We'll see. Okay. My next one continues the dark trend. There is a meme that apparently circles the internet every now and then that claims that you would have to kill 359 people in order to save up enough human blood to get the iron required to make a longsword.
Beckett wants to be made into a longsword. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of sacrifice that needs to be made.
Well, they're going to need more than 359 people. So there's a fella. His name is Eric Milzarski, and he writes for WeAreTheMighty.com. And he is a former Army radio operator and now works in the film and TV industry and is their resident nerd at We Are the Mighty. And he's like, well, that's interesting. Let's
do the math.
Yeah, he did. I am not going to share it all, but he made a very believable case with all of his math. So here's what Eric discovered. So the iron in the red blood cells is mostly in the hemoglobin, but you try to extract that iron from someone's blood. That's tricky. I mean, it probably can be done, but it's tricky. So the simple math, if they were to do that, this is extremely distilled, is that the amount of iron within the average human body totals 4 grams. So that is about 8 paper clips worth. So I think you see where I'm going with these numbers.
You'd need a lot more people.
You would. 8 times 359 is not going to be an adequate number of grams. So the iron in the metalloprotein hemoglobin isn't in a metallic state right now in your body. That's why you're not magnetized to things.
Oh.
And you don't suddenly collapse from a clogged artery because metal is going through it. When it, you know, like you get close to a magnet and all of your hemoglobin pools up on the magnet side and you die. We don't. Because that's not the state that the iron is in. So right away, you have that to overcome. He really did a deep dive. This is very detailed.
Yeah. And
I cut so much. it's instead, the oxygenated hemoglobin is diamagnetic. It repels magnets. It's extremely at an extremely low level. So the blood travels between the heart and the lungs. It's deoxygenated, making it paramagnetic. So that's the first place, he says, that's the first place any chaotic evil blacksmith should begin.
Oh, gosh.
If you can manage to create a machine to pump and deoxygenate large quantities of blood like a modified artificial heart, it would be prepared for the super magnet to pull the raw iron out. So that's job number one.
Okay.
He's outlining our plan for us. Then you need to take the blood that's been pulled out by the super magnet, and it's still, there's still other elements with it. And so you'd have to burn away the remaining oxygen and hydrogen, and voila, he says, you have something to work with in theory. All of this is, of course, still theories. He isn't a medical doctor. He was a radio operator. So he says, nobody's tested this, probably because they don't feel like being labeled a mad scientist. Legit. But what you'd be left with is something similar to iron sand. And if you've ever watched Forged in Fire, when they're making Madagascar, is that what it's called? No, when they're making Damascus.
Madagascar.
I am really into metallurgy so much.
I was like, they're making lemurs? Oh my gosh.
I didn't prepare anything about lemurs. I don't know that there's anything horrifying about them, and I don't want there to be. So,
yeah, we'll just move on.
Step away from the lemurs. All right. So we have metal sand. So that is a workable product at that point. That is the first step in the smelting process. So now you still have to factor for impurities. You'll need a total of 4.181 kilograms of blood iron sand to get 1 kilogram of workable iron.
How many people is that?
But with like 4 grams of iron in one person, but that is not pure iron, I don't think, was his point.
So if we said 3 grams in each person, how many kilograms did we need?
An average has a finish weight of 1.5 kilograms. Oh, hang on, we're going to get there. So
okay, we are, because I really want to know.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he says. He says, at this point, you're already considered a monster. So let's finish out this process, shall we?
Let's keep going.
Yeah. So an average longsword has a finished weight of around 1.5 kilograms, typically generates 0.75 kilograms of waste because, you know, they're shaving things off. And that means you'll need 2.25 kilograms of workable iron for your sword. At 4 grams per person, you need at least 352 completely drained donors to make an iron longsword out of blood. But why should we stop there? What if we were to want to make a steel blade? We just need a few additives and we could go for steel, right? 16,188 doomed souls to create a single steel blade.
Wow.
So his final thought is, to put that in perspective, you're looking at killing roughly half as many people as the bubonic plague did in 1625 London to make a steel blade from human blood. So this is unlikely to be tested.
It seems I'm just gonna put this out there. Wildly inefficient.
It does. Yeah. I can see like having a tiny bit of the blood of your enemies in a sword, but not an entire thing.
I made a paperclip.
Exactly. Yep. So that was an interesting thought experiment.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because like you did that first number and I was like, wow, it seems like a lot.
Yeah.
But then you do the math and it's like, actually, no, mm-hmm. that's
2352. Yeah. And then if you want a fancy steel blade that's going to stand the test of time and be modern, 16,188.
Wow.
That's a lot. So there you go. Huh. Which direction will you be going, Nick?
We're going to talk about pseudo penises.
I paused for a drink of water and I don't, that was a foolish choice.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the hyena.
Okay.
I can remember watching The Lion King and it shows the, you know, they call the hyenas, they're scavengers, right? They're always mm-hmm. taking the kills of the lions. Well, it turns out it's the other way around.
What?
Yeah, hyenas are very good at hunting. They're super aggressive and they're maternal led.
Really? So the Lion King has lied to us?
Yeah.
They're not laying around and...
Nope.
Hmm.
They're not laying around. They're not being lazy. It's run by a female. All of her female offspring are also kind of in charge. The lowest of the low are all of the males. The female hyena has something that no other lady does, a pseudopenis, or really, if we're going to get more detailed, it's an enlarged clitoris.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of like hyenas, female hyenas, and they do have junk hanging down.
I have not. Well, I might have not realized it, to be honest.
Well, yeah. And if you're like that, then you're probably like Aristotle and a lot of the other people back in the day who thought that there were only male hyenas because they're like, they all have penises.
The what?
Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing. So while pregnant, mm-hmm. pregnant mother hyena produces a lot of androgen. Androgen is a hormone that makes genitals grow. So mm-hmm. that clitoris and a birthing canal sticks out about 7 inches from the female's body.
That is a long ways.
Yeah, it is a long ways. You can see it when they're walking.
Wow.
Yeah. And they urinate through them. They mm-hmm. can become erect. It's erectile tissue. But so here's an interesting thing. This elongated piece of anatomy makes sex almost impossible.
How are little baby hyenas born then?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. A female has to retract the pseudopenis to mate. So it like pulls back up into her body because you can't match two straws together. It's just really difficult, right? So it retracts up into her body. And so as a result, hyenas are one of the few mammals that have almost zero forced sex.
Huh.
Yeah. So this isn't like dragonflies where, you know, she's playing dead.
Yeah. Yes.
If the female hyena is not interested, it ain't gonna happen.
Wow. Well, that's a very pro-female culture right there.
Exactly. I mean, like super pro-female. If they do get pregnant, imagine giving birth through a penis.
No, thank you.
It's a 4-pound cub through an inch wide, 23-inch long birth canal, because the birth canal is not only external, but internal.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And here's the weird thing about this evolutionary trait. So 60% of first-time moms have a cub get stuck in that external canal.
Oh my goodness. So do they die? Do they?
Yeah.
What happened? Oh.
Yeah, they die. 60%.
Wow. That is huge. I'm a little surprised that that trait hasn't evolved over the years.
Right? Because it's like, why? What 60% is very inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've if you're one of the 40% who is successful, that birth canal, that external pseudopenis has like tears in it.
Oh.
So it will heal like stretch marks, and then it's easier for things, you know, for subsequent cubs to pass out into the world. So
wow.
Scientists are like, why did this evolve? We have no idea.
Yeah, there's some really big trade-offs to the benefit of having choice there.
Well, but there, yeah, but then, you know, some people are like, well, it's all about reproductive choice. Yes, but the hyena hierarchy is very much female led, right? And a lot of researchers are saying, I don't know if they need it in order to be dominant over males.
Yeah, if it served them at some point, it no longer does.
Yeah.
Wow. So you heard it here first. The Lion King is not, in fact, a docudrama.
No, it is not. Yeah, wow. And go look at female hyena pictures. It's
that feels vaguely lewd now.
It's
Hey kids, let's look at hyena junk.
Yay!
Wow, that's a big guy. No, that's the mom.
That's mom.
Well, she could say she has balls. That's nice.
Oh, that's the other thing. So they do not have testicles, but they definitely have raised lumps in that area that are kind of like mock testicles.
All right. As I said that, I'm like, wait a minute. She didn't say anything about that. And they don't produce sperm. So
nope. No, they don't. Mm. Yeah. So it's just a really long, I'm just 4 pounds through inch wide. I'm just,
No. Wow.
Yeah. So female hyenas, boss ass bitches.
Yes. Wow. We are not going to leave penises. We're going to stay there for a minute.
Woo-hoo!
And this dates all the way back to 2009, an article that was, I found the CNN version of, but of course, when things come out, they're from all over the place. But CNN reported about Dr. James McGuire. He is the head of wound management at the Foot and Ankle Institute at the School of Podiatric Medicine at Temple University.
There's podiatric? A
lot of, yeah, podiatry.
Podiatric? Is that really how you say that?
How would you say it?
I don't have any idea. I've never heard the word. And so
podiatric. Please don't write in. We'll Google it later. We promise we will never address a podiatrist inappropriately.
Podiatric?
I think so.
Podiatric?
Neither of those is right.
My brain doesn't like it. Okay, let's just keep going. Feet. We're talking about feet.
Feet. We sort of are. He does wound care. And part of that is like people that have circulation problem or weight. There's a lot of reasons you could have a large wound in an extremity. And so they talked about the case of a woman whose wound had gotten out of control. And they were looking at a certain point, your body keeps building skin cells, but sometimes the wound is too big and it can't win. It cannot grow those skin cells fast enough. And so, like, a Band-Aid is no longer intervention. Surgical, you know, reattaching, it just gets too big. And so scientists are always looking. This is the same with, like, burn care. Same problem. Your body can't keep up. So problem that is solvable now in many, many ways. And one of those ways is to grow skin for skin grafts. And the foreskin of circumcised babies can grow up to 4 football fields of skin out of 1 baby foreskin.
What?
Yeah. Renewable resource. So great. Because like, we're not hurting. I mean, we are hurting somebody, but.
Oh, yeah, we totally are. And might as well do something with it.
Donated. Yeah. That is not the only kind of skin they use, too. The pharmaceuticals and biotech companies are extracting collagen. That's what they want from that and is needed to make that new skin graft, that big patch to then fix that problem. So they've also used pig's pancreases. So like you might have a brand new foot that's made out of a pig's pancreas or a baby's foreskin or some part of a cow. I'm like, oh, yeah. So it's a scaffolding that then the patient cells can attach to it and grow and fill that gap. Wounded soldiers and people with diabetes and pressure ulcers, they can treat all those things. They can create them from all kinds of cow intestines. That was the other one. And the skin of reptiles.
Wait, reptile skin cells on a human being?
Mm-hmm. The skin of some reptiles. But again, it's the collagen of the skin of the reptiles.
Oh,
so,
okay. Because I'm like, are you going to grow scales?
Yeah. Odds of you turning into a Spider-Man villain are probably low. Okay. I'm sorry. Some patches contain elements such as silver, which are antibacterial. So this is mostly, I thought this was interesting. And it's also funny because you might be like, this is my dick foot.
I was going to say, I would love to be able to point to a part of my arm and go, dick skin.
Yes!
That's hilarious.
Absolutely. So that is one of those amazing, truly wonderful, life-changing things for people. and years of amusement ahead of them too.
Wow. Mm-hmm. We have gone all over.
Yes, we have.
I'm sorry, everybody, but I had a good time.
Oh, no, I'm not sorry. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, freebie. This is really more of a brainstorm. Your eyeballs and your body have separate immune systems. And if your body finds out about your eyeballs, it's going to try to attack them. And it will inflame them and you will eventually grow blind.
You're making...
I read a lot of articles. I skimmed like BuzzFeed and all kinds of things.
That makes our body sound like the mafia.
Yes, it does. Or like zombies or something. I don't know. I loved the way that was phrased. If your body finds out about your eyeballs, if your body's immune system finds out, it is coming for them.
T cells are going to swarm on up and whack you. Oh, yes. My gosh.
I like to think that I am an exciting ticking time bomb. Like espionage is happening. My eyeballs are hiding in plain sight every day. That makes me much more exciting than some of the aspects of my life are. Like I'm at the grocery store and my eyeballs are cheating death. Change in the furnace filter. My eyeballs are cheating death.
You sound very super spy.
Yeah.
Damn.
There you go.
Wow. Well,
yep.
If your eyeballs are also cheating death.
I thought of another one that was super creepy. Like apparently we're creeped out by humanoid shapes in the dark, and evolutionarily speaking, that means at some point a human-like shape was an actual thing that was a real threat to us in the past. But what was that humanoid thing? Were there aliens? Was it Neanderthals? We don't know. Okay, that's all.
Probably Neanderthals.
You'd think, yeah. A slightly different looking species as things evolved.
Or just other people.
Yeah, maybe. That's another headline that I did not verify, but sounded super awesome.
Wow. That makes me think I saw a TikTok, and it's a fellow who's indigenous, and he was saying the shadow shapes in the house.
Yeah. Our brains do not like them.
No, they do not. I see them everywhere. It's a problem. Pattern recognition. It seems like a good idea.
Good pattern recognition gone bad.
Until it's not. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I promise to stop now. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like this last bit, it's like you're one of those gumball machines where you get prizes.
And extras keep coming out.
Yeah. I threw in a quarter and I got two plastic containers instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you'd like to hear more episodes, ask your smart speaker to play Brain Junk Podcast. And wherever you listen, whenever you listen, please like and subscribe. And if you like this kind of episode specifically, go to our Facebook page, Brain Junk, and comment. You know, let us know. Or brainjunkpodcast@gmail. And send us an email. Because, like, we really enjoy doing these and we want to know if you like them, too.
Indeed.
Yeah. So check out our Instagram for fun science and history facts. Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. It might be gross, but I guarantee you will not be bored.